Kathy coming to you for the Decatur Herald and Review for Thursday, July the 10th. Starting on the front page, this headline reads, Judge denies bid to toss sex abuse convictions. Decatur couple's bid to overturn sex abuse image convictions rejected. Prisoner Kelly J. Nichols shuffled into a courtroom, shackled at the wrist and ankles Tuesday, and she left the same way after a judge rejected an attempt to overturn her conviction for shooting a video that depicted the sexual abuse of a child. Nichols, 54, had filed a motion seeking to get the sentence thrown out or a new trial after she received a six-year punishment on May 29th. Her motion also included the convictions on 9 counts of possession of still images of child sexual abuse of young girls, for which she had also been found guilty. Those convictions were left standing, along with the same convictions on the same 9 charges of image possession against her 57-year-old husband Douglas Nichols, whose attempt to see his convictions overturned also failed. The Decatur couple had both been convicted in October after a joint bench trial before Macon County Circuit Court Judge Lindsay Shelton. Since then, the couple have fired their original defense attorneys, and Tuesday's hearing was brought by their new defense team of Chicago-based lawyers Michael Leonard and Robert Robertson. In almost 4 hours of courtroom drama, in front of benches packed with the defendant's family and supporters, the new lawyers hammered home their case. They cited fresh forensic evidence which showed the cell phone that recorded the video was not possessed by Kelly Nichols, but a teenage girl and member of the family who was one of the 2 victims in the case. Now a grown woman and dental student, the victim testified that she concluded she had in fact shot the video of a topless female child bouncing on a pogo stick. She said she does not remember doing it, but can see from the way the camera is held that she was recording it, and it was downloaded to a storage drive that she used. Yes, I took that video, she told the judge after being warned of the dangers of perjuring herself. Things got heated when former lead defense attorney Andrew Wessler was questioned by Leonard. He accused the Decatur-based lawyer of failing to do a proper job by not tracing the ownership and use of the cell phone that took the video. He told Wessler he had relied on his belief that it was obvious the video was not pornographic and that evidence would show that neither of the Nichols couple had legally possessed the images, which were stored on files accessible to many different people. Wessler replied that in a family which openly shared phones with each other, proving which phone shot the video didn't seem to have much value. He said it was obvious to him that the victim and not Kelly Nichols had shot it, and in any case, neither the video or the still images met the legal standard of pornography. Wessler said he believed and still believes the outcome of the cases stands on an egregious miscarriage of justice. It just shakes my belief in the court system, he added. Leonard, rebuked by the judge several times for argumentative questioning of Wessler, replied, "That is one thing we can agree upon today, sir." Summoning up the defense case, Robertson said the previous defense team was guilty of inadequate representation. He said they believed their strategy of maintaining the video and images were not porn and not really possessed by the Decatur couple was a slam dunk, and it went disastrously wrong. It failed so miserably that Kelly Nichols is sitting in the Department of Corrections for 6 years going through hell, he added. But Special Prosecutor Michael Rivera said that for all their bluster, the new defense team hadn't produced any new evidence that made a difference or aired claims not heard before. He described the critique of Wessler as Monday morning quarterbacking, buoyed by a victim-turned-defense witness who conveniently now says things she never mentioned in the trial. Rivera said the defense's original strategy had been well argued, it just hadn't convinced the judge. Making her ruling, Shelton said she had not found the original defense had been inadequate, and she also noted the changing views of the victim, claiming she shot the video, and she said Kelly Nichols had been frank about her videoing habits at the bench trial. Kelly Nichols testified on the stand when she was asked specifically about taking naked videos and images. She admitted to taking various nude images and videos of girl victims throughout their lives, the judge said. Douglas Nichols is due to face his sentencing hearing August 29th and remains free. He is also facing 4 counts of aggravated sexual assault and 8 counts of criminal sexual abuse of a victim under the age of 18 in a separate case. It was while Decatur Police Department detectives were investigating those charges that the video and the child abuse images were discovered. This next front page article is under climate. Intense rainfall events to ramp up. The warming atmosphere will cause intense downpours like those in Texas, but there's no telling where they will happen. It's not just Texas and North Carolina. Intense rain is falling more and more frequently in many areas of the U.S., though where it occurs and whether it causes catastrophic flooding is largely a matter of chance, according to experts. More than 100 people died in the Texas Hill Country over the weekend after 12 inches of rain fell in just hours. The deluge was driven by warm, moist air left over from Tropical Storm Barry and Hurricane Flossie that created conditions for repeated thunderstorms in the same location, said Texas climatologist John Nielsen Gammon. Last year, Hurricane Helene dumped more than 30 inches of rain on western North Carolina, triggering catastrophic flooding that washed away roads and homes, killing more than 100 people in that state alone. This week, flooding from the remnants of Tropical Storm Chantal prompted dozens of water rescues in other parts of North Carolina, and this spring, record rainfall in Kentucky caused severe and deadly flooding. Although it can be difficult to attribute a single weather event to climate change, and hilly or mountainous terrain worsen flooding, experts say a warming atmosphere and oceans due to the burning of fossil fuels make catastrophic storms more likely. That's because the atmosphere can hold 7% more water for every degree Celsius, creating a giant sponge of sorts that sucks up moisture from bodies of water and vegetation. The moisture later falls back to the earth in increasingly unpredictable and destructive downpours. It's just loading the dice toward heavy rainfall when the situation is right, said Kenneth Kunkel, a climate scientist at North Carolina State University. Going back through the U.S. weather station records dating to 1955, Kunkel found that rain over the past 20 years has become more intense in the eastern two-thirds of the country, including the southern Great Plains where Texas is located. Intensities have remained the same or declined in the west and southwest. The 700 stations that began collecting data in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, the highest proportion of two-day rainfall records, have been set in just the past 10 years, Kunkel said, though that doesn't fully reflect most western stations which were established later. Nielsen Gammon said the overall intensity of extreme rainfall in Texas has increased by 15% over the past 40 to 50 years. Still, it's almost impossible to predict where the most catastrophic rain will fall in any given year, Kunkel said. This month, it was the Texas Hill Country's turn to get hit. Last fall, in western North Carolina, it was our turn, Kunkel said, adding that just because an area was spared over the last 20 or 30 years, it doesn't mean they aren't vulnerable. They got lucky. The worst flooding and greatest loss of life in Texas occurred in Kerr County, in an area known as Flash Flood Alley, because of its steep terrain that funnels water into the Guadalupe River, a popular recreational area. Though the county did not get the most rain from the storms, the distribution of rainfall was one of the worst possible patterns, because the most intense downpours were over the headwaters of the South Fork of the Guadalupe River, causing water to rush into areas where hundreds of people, including children, were camping, said Nielsen Gammon. If the epicenter had been 10 miles north or south, the rain would have been divided among different river basins, he said. If it had been further downstream, larger flood plains would have absorbed and slowed much of the water. Years of drought also likely exacerbated the flooding. Kerr County, for example, had been in an extreme or exceptional drought for more than 3 years, aside from one four-week period last fall. That likely left the soil compacted, which caused water to run off instead of soaking into the ground, said Brad Rippey, a U.S. Department of Agriculture meteorologist. Then, air from the warmer-than-normal Gulf of Mexico, a reflection of global warming, blew into the state with a higher water content than it would have had decades ago. It all added up to just a perfect storm of events that caused catastrophe, said Rippey. There are things that had come together to make this happen. And on page 2, Some Fear Student Loan Retribution by Colin Brinkley. President Donald Trump is reshaping a student loan cancellation program into what some fear will become a tool for political retribution, taking aim at organizations that serve immigrants and transgender youth. Public service loan forgiveness allows government employees such as teachers and firefighters and many who work for nonprofits to have their student loans canceled after they made payments for 10 years. The Education Department is preparing an overhaul that would strip the benefit from organizations involved in quote-unquote illegal activities, with the final determination left to the U.S. Education Secretary. A draft proposal released by the department includes definitions of illegal activity that center on immigration, terrorism, and transgender issues. Several advocates invited to weigh in on the draft proposal raised concerns it would give the department subjective authority to decide if an organization is engaged in anything illegal, a power that could be used to remove entire hospital systems or state governments from the program. That's definitely an indicator for me that this is politically motivated and perhaps will be used as a tool for political punishment, said Betsy Mayotte, president of the Institute of Student Loan Advisors, and one of the advocates asked to review the policy as part of a rulemaking process. More than 1 million Americans had loans canceled through the program, including nurses, college staffers, and park rangers. Congress created the program in 2007 to encourage college graduates to work in the public sector, where salaries are often lower than at for-profit companies. The program promises to cancel all remaining debt after borrowers make 120 monthly loan payments while working for any level of government. Currently, nonprofits are also eligible if they focus on certain areas, including public interest law, public health, or education. A federal database of eligible nonprofits includes some that provide grants to transgender youth and their families so they can travel to states that permit gender-affirming care for minors. It also includes some that provide legal services to immigrants regardless of their legal status. Trump ordered changes to the program in March, declaring it misdirected tax dollars into activist organizations that harm national security. He directed the Education Department to remove organizations tied to illegal activities, singling out those that work with immigrants or transgender youth, or who support terrorism, a label he often applies to pro-Palestinian activists. His plan has the potential to block huge numbers of student loan borrowers from cancellation. Those who work for an ineligible employer would no longer be able to make progress toward cancellation, effectively forcing them to find a new job or forego loan forgiveness. Hospitals and schools at risk. The proposal's definitions of illegal activity largely mirror those laid out by Trump. They include aiding or abetting in the violation of federal immigration law and supporting any group designated as a foreign terrorist organization. Also on the list are violations of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, a law that Trump officials invoked to root out diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. Also considered illegal is engaging in the chemical and surgical castration or mutilation of children in violation of federal or state law. It says that includes the use of hormone therapy or drugs that delay puberty. It defines children as those under 19. It raises concerns that entire hospital systems could become ineligible if a single department provides certain care to transgender youth. Likewise, the federal government could potentially strip the benefit from entire cities that limit cooperation with federal immigration officials. I could see entire cities and entire civil structures being targeted, said Alyssa Dobson, financial aid director at Slippery Rock University and a member of the rulemaking panel. It could also give the administration another tool in its campaign against universities that run afoul of the president's politics, she said. This, unfortunately, may allow them to further chase the undesirable institutions in their view, she said. When determining if an employer should be deemed ineligible, the department's proposal would take into account court judgments and other legal findings, but it leaves room for at least some degree of subjectivity, giving the education secretary the authority to exclude organizations without proof of a conviction or settlement. Only one negotiator opposed the proposal, the education department said. Several negotiators on the rulemaking panel said they took issue with the proposal, but voted in favor of tweaks that they felt improved the rule. An education department spokesperson said that the agency has an obligation to prevent unlawful conduct and ensure that employers in the PSLF program are not complicit in illegal activities. And under food aid, thousands could lose SNAP benefits in Illinois, by Ben Selinsky. Hundreds of thousands of Illinoisans could lose benefits from the Federal Food Assistance Program, while the state will be required to cover more costs under changes passed in the latest domestic policy plan. President Donald Trump signed the One Big Beautiful Bill Act into law on July 4th, making sweeping changes to social services programs, including Medicaid. Among the programs being revamped is a Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, better known as SNAP. The bill institutes new work requirements for many people to remain eligible for benefits and shifts some costs for the program to the states. Food stamps were first established in the 1930s during the Great Depression. Renamed SNAP in 2008, the program provides monthly stipend for low-income Americans to purchase select foods at grocery stores. While states implement the program and pay a portion of administrative expenses, the federal government has historically covered the cost of the benefits. Under the law, work requirements to qualify for SNAP benefits have been expanded to include people up to age 64, along with homeless people, veterans, and young adults leaving foster care. Previously, only people 18 to 54 had to meet work requirements. Those populations didn't previously have to prove they were doing a certain amount of work, but when the changes kick in, they will have to do 80 hours of paid, unpaid, or volunteer work each month to qualify for benefits, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The law continues to provide exemptions for people who are physically unable to work, such as for pregnancy. The changes could leave 360,000 people in Illinois at risk of losing eligibility, according to the state. Trump and the Republicans would rather children go hungry so their friends can receive tax cuts, Governor J.B. Pritzker said in a statement. Here in Illinois, we have been working to combat food insecurity for years, and while no state can backfill these costs, the state of Illinois will continue to fight against these harmful impacts and stand up for working families. About 1.9 million people were using SNAP in Illinois as of March 2025, according to the USDA. Illinois and most other states will have to cover a greater portion of costs for SNAP under the law, including benefits based on the state's error rate of over and underpayment on benefits. Beginning in federal fiscal year 2028, which begins in October 2027, the law requires states with an error rate greater than 10% as of at least FY25 to cover 15% of the cost of benefits. States with lower error rates would cover a smaller portion of the benefits. Illinois has recorded an 11% error rate in FY24, according to the USDA. More than 1.8 million Illinoisans received $4.7 billion of SNAP benefits in FY25, according to the state. If Illinois must pay 15% of the cost of benefits, it could leave the state on the hook for $705 million, or about 1.3% of the current year budget. Also beginning in federal fiscal year 2027, which begins in October of 2026, states will have to cover 75% of administrative costs for SNAP rather than 50%. This year's state budget appropriates $60 million for administrative costs for SNAP, up $20 million from last year. The changes are part of initiatives by congressional Republicans and the Trump administration to shift more responsibility for assistance programs to the state. Nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimated changes to SNAP will reduce federal spending by $279 billion over 10 years, but increase state spending on SNAP by $121 billion over the same time. The CBO predicts some states could abandon the program or choose to provide a lower level of benefits and not make up for reductions Congress made to the program. Pritzker and 22 other governors sent a letter to Congress last month saying it's possible that states will have to leave or reduce the SNAP program because of the new cost requirements. And this article from Central Illinois. State fines abortion doctor. Lawsuit provider failed to evaluate the patient by Angie Leventis-Lorigos. A Champaign abortion provider accused in a lawsuit of perforating a patient's uterus and leaving half a fetus inside her body has been reprimanded and fined in connection with that case by the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, according to records obtained by the Tribune. Dr. Keith Resinger-Kindle of the Equity Clinic must pay a $5,000 fine and complete 20 hours of continuing medical education for failing to evaluate a patient before a procedure which resulted in hospitalization due to complications, according to the May 16th disciplinary action by the state regulatory agency. Resinger-Kindle did not immediately return Tribune requests for comment on the reprimand and fine by the state. He also has not responded to previous requests for comment on the lawsuit, which is still pending. An attorney representing the physician declined to comment. In March, an Indiana abortion patient identified as Jane Doe filed a medical negligence lawsuit against Reisinger Kindle in Champaign County Circuit Court. At roughly 22 weeks pregnant, the patient had a two-day procedure at the clinic that ended on April 2, 2023, according to the lawsuit. In Reisinger Kindle's notes, he stated the products of conception were visually inspected and confirmed to be complete after the abortion and patient was discharged, according to the lawsuit. The following day, the patient called the clinic to report heavy cramping and was instructed to take an over-the-counter pain reliever, the suit alleges. A few hours later, she called back after taking ibuprofen with limited relief and complained of pressure, which made it hard to breathe, the complaint said. That message was given to Reisinger Kindle, and the patient was advised to take a laxative, according to the complaint. The patient called again to say the abdominal cramping increased despite taking two laxatives, the lawsuit said. The patient was then advised to take an enema and consider presenting at an urgent care facility or to an emergency room, according to the complaint. On April 4th, the woman was admitted to the emergency room of an Indianapolis hospital where the fetal remains were discovered and surgically removed from her pelvis, according to the complaint. Parts of the fetal skull had adhered to her intestines and were taken out, the lawsuit said. She was also treated for a hole in her uterus, roughly the size of a quarter or a half dollar, according to the complaint. Had Reisinger Kindle performed an adequate exam of the remains, it should have been obvious that fetal parts were left behind, stated a report by another obstetrician gynecologist, which was included in the court filings. The lawsuit seeks a jury trial and more than $50,000 in damages. In late June, Reisinger Kindle's attorneys filed a legal memorandum challenging the patient's ability to file the lawsuit under a pseudonym, arguing that she should be required to use her name. The patient's attorney had argued in court documents that she should be allowed to file the lawsuit under a pseudonym because the case deals with an abortion, an undeniably sensitive subject that has long been recognized as falling within the zone of personal privacy. The next court date in the case is scheduled in August. Equity Clinic was founded in February 2023 by Reisinger Kindle, who at the time lived and worked in Ohio. Prior to the May disciplinary action, Reisinger Kindle had not been disciplined in either Illinois or Ohio, according to state records. Prison Term for Tiger King Star by Jeffrey Collins, from Charleston, South Carolina. Tiger King star Bhagavan Doc Antle is going to prison, but not for as long as prosecutors wanted, after admitting he broke federal law, buying endangered animals to keep at his zoo in South Carolina. Antle was sentenced to 1 year and 1 day behind bars and fined $55,000 on Tuesday, nearly 2 years after he pled guilty to trafficking in exotic animals and money laundering. He pleaded guilty in November of 2023. It's likely the end to the legal dramas that surrounded Tiger King, the Netflix true crime documentary that captivated a country shut down by COVID-19. The star, Joe Exotic, is serving a 21-year federal prison sentence for trying to hire two different men to kill the other star, Carol Baskin. Exotic, whose real name is Joseph Maldonado Passage, was a collector and private zookeeper from Oklahoma, and Baskin runs a big cat rescue in Florida. Antle appeared in the first season with Exotic and Baskin and was the star of the show's third season. Prosecutors say that Antle bought animals on the black market. Antle's crimes were unrelated. He laundered money used in a human smuggling scheme because he needed large amounts of cash quickly to buy animals like chimpanzees, lions, tigers, cheetahs, and other creatures, prosecutor Patrick Duggan said. These animals are illegal to sell because they are endangered, and their high prices could encourage poachers to steal them from the wild, Duggan explained. He was knowingly and illegally trading them as part of a black market that drives another black market of poaching and smuggling, Duggan said in the court Tuesday. Antle's lawyers requested a sentence of just probation or home confinement, saying their client needed to care for the 150 exotic animals that consume 1,000 pounds of meat a day at his Myrtle Beach safari. They said many of the animals only respond to Antle. Friends and family asked for mercy for Antle. About 25 friends and family packed a federal courtroom in Charleston. Several told Judge Joseph Dawson III that Antle was generous and caring. They said he raised hundreds of thousands of dollars to fight poaching and preserve wild habitats for tigers, lions, and chimpanzees. The judge was swayed. Federal guidelines called for about 2 years in prison, to which prosecutors agreed. Dawson said that though Antle broke federal law, all the evidence pointed to him caring for animals. Antle apologized at the end of his sentencing and hearing for causing problems for his life's work. "I made a mistake. I did stupid things," he said, adding, "I hope I'll be able to pull back together for everybody." Antle's Myrtle Beach Safari was known for charging hundreds or thousands of dollars to let people pet and hold baby animals such as lions, tigers, and monkeys that were so young they were still being bottle-fed. Customers would pay $200 for 5 minutes and photos with a baby chimp, or $7,000 for a sleepover. Antle would sometimes ride into tours on an elephant. The zoo remains open by reservation only. Prosecutors say Antle sold or bought cheetahs, lions, tigers, and a chimpanzee without the proper paperwork for a decade. They said he also laundered more than $500,000 so he could quickly get cash to buy more animals. Antle knows federal law well and was able to avoid prosecution for years, prosecutors said. He would accept a large quote-unquote donation for an animal to his conservation foundation. He would claim to keep the animal in the same state he bought it, but then move it to his Myrtle Beach Zoo, prosecutors said. This article reads, "Dumpster diving leads to stabbing charges," and this is by Tony Reed. A good Samaritan who came to the aid of a dumpster diver being intimidated by two men was stabbed in the arm, police report. The violence happened on May 29th in the 1100 block of North Main Street in Decatur, and police named the assailant who wielded the knife as Dustin W. R. Robinson Beatty, 32. He was tracked down and arrested July 3rd and appeared Monday in Macon County Circuit Court, facing charges of an aggravated battery with a deadly weapon and criminal damage. He is accused of picking up and smashing the stabbing victim's cell phone as he fled the scene. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said the 41-year-old victim had seen Robinson Beatty and another unidentified suspect approach the dumpster diving man and start yelling at him. The victim said he went over toward the two males to try and defuse the situation, said Officer Sarah Heatherton, who signed the affidavit. He said it appeared as if both males were drunk or under the influence of narcotics. Robinson Beatty is described as reacting by knocking the victim's hat off of his head, prompting the victim to knock him to the ground with a punch to the face. Robinson Beatty's accomplice then aimed a kick at the victim, which missed, but as the victim jerked back, his cell phone fell to the ground. Heatherton said the victim tried to run away at this point, but Robinson Beatty outran him and slashed at him with a pocket knife, inflicting a 3-inch gash on the victim's right forearm. Robinson Beatty and the accomplice then fled, but Robinson Beatty paused long enough to pick up the cell phone on the ground and smash it. The victim's version of events was backed up by the 46-year-old dumpster diver and a 57-year-old woman who also witnessed what happened. Robinson Beatty was granted pretrial release at the July 7th arraignment hearing with conditions that include staying away from the victim. He is due back in court July 23rd for a preliminary hearing when he will enter pleas to the charges against him. And we're on page 4. Sip and Stroll set July 11th at the Scoville Zoo by Danette Beckett. Scoville Zoo will be hosting the Sip and Stroll event from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, July 11th at the zoo. Tickets are $25 in advance or $30 at the door. The adults-only event allows visitors to stroll the zoo while sipping adult beverages. Admission includes train and carousel rides and one drink ticket. A cash bar will be open during the event. Tickets can be purchased at thescovillezoo.com. Free School Supply Drive set for August 2nd by Danette Beckett. The community-centered back-to-school drive, backpacks, and blueprints will be from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. August 2nd at the Decatur Civic Center. Along with free school supply giveaway, resources also will include education and support to prepare families for the upcoming school year. Children will receive free backpacks, hygiene kits, and information on community programs. Parents can learn about financial literacy tools, life insurance resources, and career support. Community vendors and local businesses are invited to participate. The event is sponsored by I Am Defined Ministries in partnership with Generations Abundance. For more information, you can get involved. Call 217-358-3033. And that's the end of part one. Please stay tuned for part two in a couple of minutes.